Welcome to Blogging Hits TV. This is Con Carroll in Washington, D.C., here at the New America Foundation, DuPont Circle. I'm here with Bill Scherer, who's about to tell us about his cat problems that might pop up. So take it away, Bill.
I'm here in Northampton, Massachusetts. My cat, Governor, is unfortunately suffering from two deep-seated ear infections, which is throwing off his balance. And he's in the room with me here. There may be a time when I have to monitor his behavior because he's a little wobbly. Doing much better, though. It's been about a week. We actually had to take him for an MRI. There could have been, a tumor or something. But fortunately, there wasn't. Just going to be a long antibiotics regimen and a lot of TLC.
Well, I'm sure everyone is very happy to be updated on Bill's cat. As someone who is definitely allergic to cats, I know I am. But let's go ahead and kick this thing off, Bill. I think we want to start off today talking about the difference between the left and right online. Do you have any initial thoughts on the subject?
Let's try something else.
Okay, I'll be even more specific. It was suggested we could talk about why there are no communities on the right, why the left with daily costs and their common boards tend to foster another environment for people to go to, whereas Instapundit doesn't have comments, Corner, of course, doesn't. And what they said about the two different blogospheres.
There's a lot of talk, I think, from the left, actually, criticizing the right blogosphere for the lack of comments. But quite frankly, I don't think that means the conservative blogosphere doesn't have community. I think they have community in a different way. They are generally better than liberal bloggers at linking to each other within their posts, not talking about blog roles, but talking about within their posts themselves.
But I think even in blog roles, they're better linking to each other. I know, with the whole blog role amnesty day, I was reading Bill Swift has a post about a New York Magazine article that detailed people's blog roles and showed that conservatives generally did a better job of linking to each other and their smaller blogs, whereas the higher-end lefty blogs, the A-list, if you will, pretty much linked to each other and had a lot less love for those further on down the food chain.
It's a little harsh. I mean, quite frankly, I think there's a lot of truth to that, but I don't want to say that the A-list liberal bloggers don't care about the other bloggers. I don't think that's true.
No, I don't think I said that.
No. I'm by no means casting. But I don't want to give that impression.
Good. Let's not.
But quite frankly, I have difficulty myself, as a mid-level blogger. I have a particularly large blog role at liberaloasis.com, but I'm not especially good at incorporating other blog links within my posts because I'm very focused on just getting my own thoughts out. It is work. Building communities are work.
Right. On that note, I don't think I introduced myself when I came on. I write the blogometer for the Hotline, political tip sheet. My contribution to the Hotline is the only portion that's available publicly. The rest is subscription-based. But basically, all I do is cover blogs. So everything I write every day is filled with links. And I can tell you, it takes a lot of time to do the research, to read all the posts, get everything cut and ready to go, to work into your work. And, at the end of 3 hours of reading and then writing it up, it's tough to get my thoughts out. So I completely sympathize with you saying it's difficult to go out there and link to other blogs.
But at the same time, I do think it's very important, particularly if you're a politically active blogger and you're interested in leveraging the potential power of the blogosphere. If I can do a shameless book plug, in my book, Wait, the Move to Canada.
Well, that's what blogging is all about.
I actually did an interview with Peter Dow, who was working with the Kerry campaign in 2004.
And, of course, is now
Dow
Clinton.
Report, and now he's with Senator Clinton's presidential campaign. And he said to me, the most important thing that liberals can do, any individual liberal, is to participate in the blogosphere in some way, whether it's having your own or commenting or what have you, because if that community grows from, say, roughly 2 million people that it might be now to 10 million people, that's a much more powerful network. Well, but how do you grow that if people don't think that it was easier. You know, when I started blogging in 2002, and the blogosphere community was much smaller, you could simply email a few folks and say, hey, I started a blog, and you'll get some instant traffic your way. Hey, check out this new guy.
Let me try to nail you down there, Bill.
Yeah.
I got to be firm with you. Are you for or against Blogger Amnesty Day?
I think Blogger Amnesty Day is somewhat of a distraction to the larger community building issue. I think, on one hand, everyone should run their blog roles the way they feel like it. You know, no one has an obligation to have. I mean, Liberal Oasis has a very large blog role, but it's a cumbersome thing to maintain and to upkeep. And I certainly wouldn't expect every single blog to have to do something that you needed a certain design to make that work for your page. And if someone wants to say, I want to have a limited blog role that's really reflective of what I read and what my blog talks about, that's totally appropriate. And on that same point, it's not really in the blog roles that I think the community is necessarily built. You don't get that much traffic from a blog role link.
You can say that, but I mean, as you know, a lot of the smaller lefty blogs say that's definitely true when you're, you know, Marcos or, you know, even like a moderate size traffic guy like yourself. But when you're really small, getting on a bigger blog role, you know, like Daily College Ratios is a lot.
Well, as someone who was a victim of Blog Role Amnesty Day on both Atrios and Co's. I can speak from some, you know, direct effect. You know, my traffic was not massively destroyed by that action.
Oh, well, there you go.
But what's more important, I think, is not having, you know, the link in the blog role in the sidebar, but if you're linked in someone's actual post, that blogger
right.
is saying, this guy has something important to say today. That's much more influential and powerful and does a much better job at moving traffic around and building the community. So,
in what way? What's the physics behind that?
I'm sorry.
Oh, in what way? What's the physics? How is that actually technically better?
I think if you're moving the traffic around, if a bunch of people are on one blog and saying, "Hey, check out this other guy's blog. He's got something important to say today," and that flow keeps moving from blog to blog to blog, you then have a sense that, hey, there's this teeming, thriving community of information and analysis here that I want to be a part of. And if that community gets very limited, there's not going to be any incentive for new voices to come in and grow the community and have it be more powerful and influential. So that's what I think is the critical thing for coming from a liberal perspective, what I want to see liberal bloggers do more, and what I should do more. I'm by no means perfect at this, but again, it's an easier thing to say than to do. But my concern about Blog Role Amnesty Day is if it's not done if someone wants to pare down their blog roles, fine. But if you don't at the same time do a good job of spreading traffic around in other ways, then you might have a situation where your community is going to minimize and be more of a click, and that's not going to be good for the liberal blogosphere as a whole.
Do you ever feel as though Marcos is trying to drive bloggers onto his own site as diarists? I mean, it seems that, when he did do the Blog Role Amnesty Day, a lot of the ones, the alumni, Boom Andrew Tribune, et cetera, weren't happy about it, but they still come back to Daily Coast and do their diaries, etc. And there's definitely a strong community just at Daily Coast, just in the diary sections. Do you think building up that community is enough, or do you think the lefty blogosphere is even better having a bunch of smaller blogs that people go to separately, as opposed to one place, Daily Coast, where people can come and see what's going on the comment boards?
Well, I think that's a critical point to make. You know, in fairness to Coast, Daily Coast is a community in and of itself. It's a very large community. It's the largest, you know, blog community in all the liberal blogosphere, or the whole political blogosphere. And so while I do think there should be a larger objective to have a broad blogosphere community on the left, it's not necessarily fair to say, hey, Coz, you're building one community here. You need to build even more community. He's building community. And he's doing an excellent job of it, and it's incumbent upon the rest of us to find other ways that we can help build community too.
Speaking of what an excellent job he's doing, how about we transition into who's more successful, the Netroots or conservative bloggers? And I think I'm actually going to argue...
Conservatives can't be Netroots?
What?
Conservatives can't be Netroots?
No, I think they chafe at the name.
Really?
You know, Lowfeld was a Netroots coordinator for Jim Webb, and John Hankey was the new media outreach director for George Allen. I think that's definitely a trend you see on the Republican side, that no one has Netroots in their title. That's not how they refer to themselves. You get new media, sometimes blog outreach, but
they're
don't
think... They're also citizen journalists, I understand.
Some of them, yes. But running away from our original question here is the ultimate the effectiveness of, if I can label them, the Netroots versus conservative bloggers. And as I was saying, I thought you were going to make the case that the conservative bloggers were more effective or at least had more victories in the past.
Well, both sides have had their victories. You know, I would not say it's appropriate to say only, you know, liberal Netroots have had victories and conservatives haven't. They certainly have in their...
Like?
I mean, you know, scalping Dan Rather is a victory of sorts, not one that, you know, I sit back and applaud and say, good show.
Right, but
they had an effect.
And they also helped out in the with the Swift voters. They were up there fact-checking John Kerry on his midnight New Year's Eve in Cambodia.
Well,
they kept those stories alive.
That speaks to a larger point that I believe HRS has made in the past, that there is a right-wing media machine or noise machine.
Yes.
That does a very good job at, from my perspective, manufacturing scandals, often not based in actual fact, but and whether you agree with that point or not, they are able to get those scandals into the mainstream media. They don't just live in a conservative echo chamber. They live beyond that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's another venue for Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, RNC Research Shop. It's another venue for them to get that message out.
Right. And the blogging component of that, in many ways, is just an add-on. This is Atrios's earlier point. If the blogs weren't there, the right-wing media machine would still be very healthy. They've built a system based on Fox News, on right-wing talk radio, and the Drudge Report, which granted is web-based but not a blog, and that's been sufficient enough to be able to catapult stories of their liking into the larger press. There hasn't been that same infrastructure on the left, and now with blogs you have seen a fresh ability for liberals to do that. So that's the way blogs have been able to catch up. It's almost, in a sense, the technology has helped us do in a course of a couple of years what it took the right, you know, arguably, you know, 10-plus years to do, if not more.
What would you say were some of the bigger Netroots victories?
I mean, there are certain things that, you know, are kind of like Jeff Gannon, for example, exposing him as being, you know, essentially a plant in the White House press room, you know, was a victory.
Not my favorite example. I mean, I think you've got to look at Lamont. I know they didn't win that race in the end. Lieberman eventually won.
Well, it's really a victory
I think you can definitely argue that, you know, they, in a sense, neutered him in some way. He's definitely not a go-to person for the networks to be like, okay, this is what one Democrat is saying. He's definitely been, you know, essentially, you know, he's gotten on INEX his name now. And that's definitely worth something.
Well, I think even more important than that, you know, beyond the individual personalities, I think it shows... You know, Ned Lamont would not have been taken seriously as a candidate if bloggers, and also I'd say Air America, which gave him some of his first airtime, if they didn't give him an initial megaphone and the ability to show, hey, I have some grassroots support here. Mainstream political reporters would have considered this guy, you know, a vanity candidate or an afterthought. He never would have gotten the coverage. Same is true also, I'd say.
But was it really about Lamont and his candidacy or not liking Lieberman?
Well, there was a thirst for someone to articulate, you know, an anti-Iraq war message. It wasn't just about Lieberman as a person. And certainly there are other issues besides the war that people were unhappy with Lieberman about. But there definitely was a craving for someone, you know, to say we need to have a candidate here who's going to reflect what the party believes on this huge issue of the day. So I think that was where the initial energy came in. Adding also when Lamont stepped up, and I think he showed that he did have some chops. He had plenty of things to say beyond the war. He wasn't a single issue candidate. I thought people were even more excited about him, and therefore he transcended just being, for example, you know Jonathan Tessini in New York ran up against Hillary Clinton, but didn't get the same kind of traction that Lamont did. But to go back to the larger point about the power of blogs, I think blogs were able to give Lamont a platform they would not have otherwise had the ability to create for himself, unless he wanted to open up his entire checkbook, which he did.
Well, people talk about all the money he raised online, but something like 80% of his money came from his own checkbook.
But it definitely seemed like he wasn't going to go all the way with it if he couldn't show that he could raise money from grassroots and not just have it be a checkbook candidacy. He wanted to show that first, or else he wasn't going to follow through with it. That was my impression, at least. And be able to gain some of that online fundraising also gave him the ability to get the mainstream coverage that they needed to be viable.
True, but I don't think if you moved Lamont into New York and ran him against Hillary, he would just be another Tassani. I think it was a lot more about Lieberman than it was about Lamont or his
Lieberman research. Had a longer record of betrayal.
Right.
And is much more of a quote-unquote Fox News Democrat, someone who would always, time and again, take to right-wing media, echo Republican talking points, and essentially not be a team player even though he had a nominal D next to his name. He definitely was far more of a problem in that sense than Hillary ever could be. I totally agree with that.
Looking at the Netroots helping to recruit Jim Webb, definitely another victory for them.
John Tester also a big blogger.
And Tester, and the fact that you have Tom Daschle now at Daily Kos asking for input on recruiting candidates, that you have Russ Feingold on Daily Kos asking people to support his bill with Harry Reid to defund the Iraq War. You have Maxine Waters and a whole bunch of people, Democrats in the Senate and Congress, on Huffington Post. How much of the do you think the Netroots are driving the Democrats today? The RNC in the past has tried to tie Kos to Democratic candidates, and it went nowhere. Do you think the Netroots are pushing the party in a direction, and are they being successful at that?
There's certainly blogs that are trying, and there are certainly some successes. I think there's a sense, on the right that, Harry Reid dances to Coase's drum, which I find utterly ridiculous.
On the other hand, it wasn't, Kos had a big victory. Well, it wasn't just Kos, but a lot of them with getting the Democratic candidates to nix the Fox News debate in Nevada. That was all blog-driven, and the Nevada Democratic Party inked the deal with Fox. If blogs didn't exist, that deal goes through, the debate happens. But, they got up, they made a stink about it, and even though Harry Reid gave them no credit at all, anyone who was looking at the situation knew it was only because the blogs barked that, the Democratic candidates got in line and said, okay, we're not doing this debate.
I think that's true, and I think it was a blogosphere victory, but at the same time, it wasn't that there was a post on Kos, and Harry Reid the next day said, forget it. There was a lot, there were cross pressures there. I mean, it was a real intra-party fight. And it wasn't until, certainly the bloggers were, I think, having the leg up and building much more momentum about it than other forces were. And then when Roger Ailes opened up his yap and said all sorts of offensive things, then that was the tipping point, and then the deal was scrapped. So I think that shows that, yes, blogs are having an impact and having an influence, but they're by no means yet, running the entire show.
But just to give another example, Ellen Tauscher used to be a leader on the Blue Dog Democrats. Then you had Calithix making a lot of noise about her. They have a photo of her and Bush from after 9/11, and Bush's hand is on her thigh for some reason. Who knows? And they labeled the caress to mirror Lamont's the kiss with Lieberman and Bush. And so they've been on her case for a while, and they were, labeling her as a target. And as a result, she has since, she says she's taken a sabbatical from the Blue Dogs. She says she doesn't quit them. but she's no longer a member. She's no longer on their list, and has, you know, strengthened up her a lot of her talking about against the war, etc. She still, you know, hasn't come around for them on trade, but on a lot of other issues, they pushed her out of Blue Dogs and definitely have pushed her left. So, you know, if you look at, you know, a leader like Tauscher, new leaders like, you know, Webb, Tester in the Senate, I think the Netroots, you know, it's not like they're running the show. It's not like Nancy Pelosi wakes up in the morning and calls Marcos, but they're definitely a force driving the direction of the Democratic Party.
Well, the Tauscher example, I think, is a very interesting one because, you know, there's potentially a dynamic that's not necessarily a great one when people on the party establishment are essentially doing base maintenance. What can we do to shut these guys up? You know, it's not actually listening to the substantive concerns and the strategic advice that they're getting. They're just trying to find a way to appease people. I don't really see a lot of substantive change and rethinking in Representative Tauscher. I see her doing some cosmetic things, hoping to stave off a potential primary challenge.
True, but, you know, Marcos is always talking about how important message is, and cosmetics are message. So if they got her on message, or at least not undercutting other messages, that's progress in my book.
It's potential progress. You know, the thing that concerns me most is I think there are too many people in the Beltway that don't look at bloggers as being sources of information and analysis, but just being kind of an unruly peanut gallery and an ATM machine. And if they look at them as saying, okay, they're big, they got...
Which one are you, Bill? Are you the unruly peanut gallery or the ATM machine?
I'm definitely not the ATM machine. And if the approach is, what can we do to keep these guys quiet and keep them under the tent, as opposed to, hey, let's have a real dialogue with this community because they will have interesting things to say and have been on the front edge of a lot of issues because they're not...
Other than Iraq, what are some issues you think the Netroots have helped move the Democratic Party in their direction?
Well, going back to the victories of Sherrod Brown and John Tester and Jim Webb, you know, there's an economic populist message
definitely.
That had a lot of fertile ground in the blogosphere and in, you know, Washington consultant circles that was seen as some sort of, you know, counterproductive throwback to the dark days of the 70s and not realizing, hey, you know, bloggers in some respects are, you know, close to the grassroots, hearing the concerns that are actually happening in people's communities and not just reflecting... one, reflecting reality, and two, offering some creative ways to talk about that reality. And if there was more of that, you know, healthy dialogue beforehand, maybe you wouldn't have had, you know, John Tester had to kind of scrape by, like, it won the landslide, but it was a tough primary against a more DLC-type candidate.
Yeah.
And that might not have been such a...
Webb had a fight, too.
Webb had a fight, too. I don't think it was quite as ideological as the Tester fight.
Wasn't as close either.
That's true. You know, these kinds of, you know, there doesn't need to be that kind of friction and there's some responsibility on us bloggers too to say, hey, we have ideas and messages here and they can work politically. They're right substantively, can work politically. We have to be able to make that case well so the folks in Washington realize, hey, this is not just the morally right thing to do, but also the pragmatic thing to do.
Other than the minimum wage, what have you seen actually being done in Congress by the crew you just mentioned to address economic populist issues?
Well, I mean, there's still that, you know, that first 100 hours package that not only includes...
Those aren't up yet?
I'm sorry?
That 100 hours isn't up yet?
Well, the House did its work in the first 100 hours, which was what the pledge was for. It wasn't a Senate pledge, it was a House pledge.
True.
And they met that mark with plenty of hours to spare. And that included both the minimum wage, empowering Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices, cutting student loan rates, and there's also repealing oil subsidies and putting it into alternative energy. You know, those are the big economic pieces of the agenda, and the Senate is a different bear, and they're definitely struggling with the thin majority there and the potential risk of filibuster. How do you tackle that? And because there has been so much focus.
Well, I'll give you Marcos's answer.
Yeah?
'08.
Well, in many ways it is 08, but I don't think that means that you got to sit on your hands on these policy issues now.
True.
For example, the minimum wage fight, you know, could have been handled differently. The Senate didn't have to. What's happening right now is that there's a dispute over about tax breaks for businesses as part of the package, and the House and Senate are not on the same page yet. That's why it has not been fully implemented. The Senate could have just told the Republican minority, hey, the hell with what you want, business tax breaks. This should be a clean bill. You've gotten plenty of tax breaks over the past 6 years. You certainly don't need any more. There should be no requirement that you have to do a minimum wage hike has to be done commensurate with, you know, a tax giveaway. And dare them to filibuster it. That could have been a more in-your-face, and I would say at the same time pragmatic way to go, but they chose a different route. And I have to say, you know, bloggers weren't so focused on that battle. It got a little down in the weeds.
Yeah, there was a lot else going on, though, with Iraq and
Iraq is so dominant.
Attorneygate and the rest of it, and the Libby trial. There's only so much attention to go out there.
That's exactly
to go
right.
Around.
You know, so I don't necessarily want to – I don't flagellate other bloggers for that. I mean, you know, in some ways, the Bush administration has a dump truck strategy where they're doing so many awful things all at once, and they're daring you to play catch-up to them.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a strategy.
I would not put anything – I don't put too much past them.
So moving on to the post-Bush era, maybe I can nail you down. Who is Bill Scherr going to vote for in 08?
I have no idea.
No idea, really?
No idea at all.
You haven't thought about it?
I think about it all the time.
Well, share some thoughts.
Well, it's so early. And I think a lot of bloggers are in the same boat as Matt. I can't speak for the entire blogosphere.
But right.
A lot of folks are sort of waiting back and seeing how things play out, probably on both sides of the fence.
Well, yeah, but I get paid to speak for the blogosphere, so I'll lay out, you know, who's doing well right now and who's not. On the left, Hillary, of course, is nowhere. No support on the blog. She on the Daily Kos polls, Mighty D polls. Online straw polls, of course, these are not scientific in any way, but you know she's in you know 3-5%. She's in Dodd country, not anywhere close. Then you have Edwards and Obama at the top. Edwards was up there for a while. Obama eventually closed, but some recently Obama had some issues at the healthcare debate in Las Vegas, and also. There's been some talk that Obama isn't as threateningly anti-war as they want them to be, as people want him to be. There's an AP quote he gave talking about playing chicken with Bush that a lot of them felt was a GOP talking point. He hasn't got on board with Feingold Reid yet, so there are some doubts growing. But he's definitely the favorite. He's definitely tied with Edwards up top. And, of course, on the right, Rudy Giuliani was doing very well. But there's been a lot of excitement about Fred Thompson. But the only thing other than that you really have to understand about the GOP interest in the White House right now is they don't like McCain. I think people who read blogging STDs, listeners, watchers, probably already know this, but I think most people don't really realize how much conservative bloggers don't like McCain. I think it's funny when I go through my DD and Daily Kos every day, and everyone's worried about John McCain and how well he's doing. Our HOS is always beating up St. John McCain. And I just think it's an odd choice considering, you know, just how well he's not liked on the conservative side either.
Well, I think the interest and the need to criticize McCain is not so much to dampen his support with conservative bloggers. It's to make sure the people who see themselves as independent voters and or independent-minded Democrats to make sure people understand that McCain is not the great independent maverick that you thought he was. If you want to actually reverse course with the war, he is by no means your guy. And I think they've, quite frankly, I mean, here's another case I'd say of a blogosphere victory, maybe a little bit more of an intangible one. But you used to have a lot more Democrats in Washington just reflexively say nice things about John McCain, always using him as a go-to to talk about how bipartisan they are, or, you know, this is a good idea, not because I think so, but John McCain thinks so. And bloggers, I think, really took the lead in saying, wait a second, this guy is not the guy you think he is. And this is not just a partisan thing. This is just, about his what he believes about the war, and what he and his ability to actually talk straight when you see him flip flop on things like abortion and tax cuts, etc. And they started pushing more critical information about McCain into the bloodstream, and now his poll numbers has dropped as a result. And I went and put all that on the credit of blogs. I mean, some of it is just the nature of the war itself, but. I think that was another case where bloggers were on the front edge of things, and folks in Washington were a lagging indicator.
Definitely possible. I think it's mostly largely to the war, and I think any attacks on McCain are more of generally attacking the war and hoping to attach the Republican brand to the war, and then more so of a fear of John McCain's candidacy. But back to the Democratic side. What are your feelings about Obama? Do you think he is? Do you think he'll end up with the nomination?
I have no idea. I personally, the jury's totally out in my book on all of them. I want to know, who is really going to change our foreign policy in the Gulf region.
So that's your top priority.
That is my top priority.
How are you going to go about deciding which guy's your guy?
And if I could boil it down to one issue, and I harp on this a lot, who is going to say, I am going to dismantle the permanent bases in Iraq? Because that goes beyond just, are you for or against
the war? And you know that no one has said that so far. In fact, Clinton, Obama, and Edwards are all on record saying that they're not going to, that they're going to leave forces over the horizon, is one word, training forces, et cetera, which all means bases, if not in Iraq, then definitely in the region.
Well, there's a big difference, though, between having temporary forces there that are going to do some training and are going to focus on counterterrorism but are not planning to stay for the long haul, and having, several giant structures with Burger Kings and their own traffic regulations, which are currently there. Big difference.
The troops that are going to stay there are going to want to be someplace safe. They're going to need a base.
They're going to need a base, but there's a difference between a temporary base and a permanent base. You don't have to have a Burger King on a temporary base.
So what's some language that would convince you from an Obama or an Edwards, and I'm assuming Clinton's beyond the pale, that would assure you that that's what they were committed to do? Is signing up to Feingold Reed what it would take, or what would convince you?
Well, there's language
if Iraq
both,
is your single biggest issue.
There's language in both House and Senate bills, this war funding bill that's part of the showdown right now. There is language in both of those bills to ban funding for permanent bases. So there's that in and of itself, which I would like to see them talk more about, because I think it speaks much more to what our underlying objectives in the region are. But just making that vote isn't quite enough for me. I wanted to have a public declaration that...
I hope it wouldn't, because bases can not be labeled permanent and yet still be there a long time.
Well, there's that, too. I mean, there's always ways to play with the semantics. So I want to see them say flat out, if I am president, I am renouncing and dismantling those permanent bases. It is not my foreign policy objective to have a permanent occupation in that country. And it's not my objective to use such bases to push off in other countries. That, to me, is the bigger foreign policy discussion. And there are certainly ways to sound like you're against the war, but still have, an escape clause for yourself to stay. I got a cat jumping where he shouldn't be.
Uh-oh. Calm down, Governor.
Leaving behind 20,000 troops to do training could either be a temporary phase down to zero or a deceptive way to stay permanently. I don't think the neocon game plan is to keep 100,000 troops there forever. It's to keep probably 20,000 troops there forever. So
I don't want to get bogged down on Iraq, but I think the language in the House bill as well as the Newman Feingold bill also talks about keeping forces there to attack Al-Qaeda and other forces that might spring up in Iraq.
Well, Al-Qaeda is totally appropriate to use the military to go after Al-Qaeda. That is the one enemy that's trying to hurt.
I understand, but if you're going to attack Al-Qaeda in the region and in Iraq, you're probably going to have to do it from bases in Iraq.
Temporary bases, yes. Permanent bases, no.
So as long as you call them temporary, you're fine with it.
As long as they're actually temporary. As long as once the job is done,
well,
at eradicating,
you know, Bill, on a long enough
leave.
Timeline, everything's temporary.
I'm sorry?
On a long enough timeline, everything's temporary.
There's obviously ways to fudge with it. But as far if it's a question really of what the underlying objective is. If the objective is to go after actual terrorists, that's something that I think all liberals and Democrats support.
Maybe even Republicans.
Although I question the Bush administration sometimes. You know, they talk about not negotiating with terrorists, yet they endorse Pakistan's, you know, peace deals with the Taliban militants in the border region, which I think calls into question, what is your foreign policy objective there? Is it really going after terrorists, or is it something else? If the foreign policy objective is to just be able to project illegitimate influence within Iraq and outward into the rest of the region, then that's not a foreign policy objective that I'm signing up for. That's not just going after terrorists. That's something far, far more insidious.
Fair enough.
And so, I think, quite frankly, just to go back to Hillary, perhaps, I think if Hillary wanted to do better with bloggers and beyond bloggers, just grassroots voters, period, if she made very clear, my foreign policy objectives are not the neocon ones. I am not on that gravy train. You know, you might criticize what I did in the past, but here's what I will do in the future. I think she could turn some of her support around.
So her line saying, you know, when I'm president, this war will end is not enough for you.
Well, because she's already sort of mucked that up by talking about leaving troops there indefinitely. She hasn't made clear that those troops would leave in somewhat of a defined fashion.
So if she called them temporary troops, you'd be fine with it?
If she made very, very clear those troops were specifically there for, you know, discrete and defined purposes, and once those purposes are done, that they go, that there is not any intention to stay permanently and to push on beyond the borders of Iraq. And it's the same for Obama. I sympathize with Bill Clinton here, because Obama said something very similar to Hillary on the score, just didn't get the same amount of attention.
No, it's you're right. I guess Peter Dow's been doing his job.
So they both need to, and perhaps Edwards too, maybe everyone except for Dennis Kucinich has to clarify that point.
Yeah, and no one's really taking the lead right now. It seems to me, you go on the Daily Kos comment boards, and it's all about no Obama's more anti-war, no Edwards is anti-war. There's definitely no leader when it comes to that issue. Even though, like you said, for you, it is the issue. And for voters in 06, Iraq was the issue. And for a lot of, for the Netroots, Iraq is a huge issue. And yet at the same time, you just don't see a lot of hashing out of the issue like you just talked about, as far as what specifically, what promises as far as bases, troops, temporary, permanent, they'll do. And instead, you know, Obama, coasts along on his pre-war statement that he'd be against it, and Hillary and Edwards keep getting beat up over their vote, and there's no debate looking forward.
When Obama said, let's not play chicken with the president, you know, I might have to support funding, that made a lot of folks say, hey, wait a sec, I thought you were the big anti-war guy.
That's true.
What are you really getting at? And you know, when you don't articulate what your overarching vision and strategy is, those kind of isolated comments can cause more agita than they might otherwise. Because all of a sudden, then people's perceptions of you are blown, and they don't quite know where you're going. And this is the time. You have a protracted, you know, campaign schedule, far more than before. You're not in a sprint. You're in a marathon. You actually have more time to articulate that vision and flesh it out. And show how it can stand the test of time. And, you know, all this talk about who's raising the most money and whatnot, you know, doesn't really speak to those more substantive points. And I think if you want to get bloggers more excited and interested and really on board, because despite what early indicators are, I don't think anyone's really kind of locked up any community. I think you got to speak to those big issues.
Speaking of money and Obama, who did very, very well this first quarter, have you ever looked at all at web metrics as far as Technorati, MySpace, YouTube, as far as how well the candidates are doing?
I haven't personally looked at it myself. I've seen other posts about things like that. And Obama, I think, as you indicated before, I think Obama and Edwards, you know, do well. But you might know more about this actual data than me.
Right, right. Well, I in the hotline, all we do is talk about politics and a lot about money, and so a lot of us are talking about who's going to come in and win on the first quarter. And I joke, I often been trapped in my blog world. I don't have the same mainstream sources that everyone else does. And so all I see are Blogger Energy online polls, Google News, and it's all Obama all the time, and it's really not even that close. If you look at YouTube has started a channels page, and each candidate contributes videos to the page, and you can track how many views each candidate is getting. And Obama has 2.7 million YouTube views, 2.7 million, and the next closest person is Hillary with 95,000, and Rudy with only 60,000 on the GOP side. Not even close. When you look at Technorati blog mentions, the number of times Obama is mentioned compared to Hillary, it's a little bit closer, but he's just far and away ahead of her, and the Republicans barely register at all.
I think the operative question then is, well, what does that actually mean?
What does that actually mean?
And I can only speculate. I certainly can't make any definitive declaration. But what I think it means.
I think you're in the same boat as everyone else.
What I think it means is, I think he has a good opening with younger voters who see him as a fresh face, clean slate. Not from the old ways of Washington, and there's some, as some people say, he's tapped into, the idealistic, nerve that a lot of people have. So it's a good opening for him. But I would not, if I were him, and if I were just watching from the outside, I would not presume this means he's got some sort of lock on the internet community of the youth vote or anything like that. It just shows that he made a great first impression. That's really all it means. And if he can't, and he set a very high bar for himself in that process, if he can't keep meeting expectations, it's very possible that some other candidate could all of a sudden be the next, internet favorite.
Yeah, I'm sometimes, a little bit scared of the expectations he set for himself. Did you see that art student's paper mache statue of Obama as Jesus?
I did see that.
Yes. Did you see his explanation for it?
Because he wasn't saying literally, I think Obama is Jesus.
No, quite the opposite. He was trying to make a comment that where people are putting too much faith in Obama, and that we really need to, kind of rethink all of the expectations we're putting on him, because he, as you may or may not know, is not Jesus.
I'm happy for the guy that set high expectations for himself, but I'm not going to be, voting for him unless I see that he's meeting those expectations. I mean, it's fantastic to see candidates speak in very idealistic and bold terms, but he certainly has to put, the policy meat on that vision. I mean, it's the right order. It is early, and you shouldn't knock a guy for starting with the vision. Because you should start there and then add the policy to it. Just means that we should all settle down for a little bit and wait to see what he comes up with next.
Sounds good. Wait and see. That's a good note to end our session on it.
I mean, you mentioned his presentation at the healthcare forum.
Yes.
Before, and that was not his greatest moment. I think he understood, understandably pled, hey, I just started here. It's only been a few weeks.
If I can make one point about that.
Sure.
I read reviews of his performance in Nevada at Mighty D, Taylor Marsh, and the Las Vegas Gleamer, and they all said, pretty much the same thing, that he did not do well, that the crowd was expecting more and was not impressed with his platitudes, and everything was fine. Daley Costa didn't get upset, Mark H.O.S. didn't get upset, but then you had an AP report come out and say the same thing. You had some other MSM reports come out and say this, and then all of a sudden, it was on fire. Oh, my God, the MSM has created this Obama not substantive MAME, and, there's a big right-wing agenda, and we need to stop them. When, the lefty bloggers, Mighty D, Taylor Marsh, and Las Vegas Gleamer all said it, it was fine. But when the mainstream media said the exact same thing, they got their heads bitten off. I found that interesting.
It's a fine line, because I think it's totally legitimate to have watched the forum and concluded that he wasn't as as well. It's in some ways it's hard to put too much on because you know Hillary doesn't have a plan either, and no one has a plan except for John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich.
Right.
And so they all danced around things for the most part. The only thing where it's unfair to Obama is that he set the high expectation for himself. Hillary at least came out with a very substantive critique of things, and therefore she got more of a pass. And Obama seemed to be more leaning on the platitudes, and people were definitely expecting a lot more. So it's one thing to be able to say constructively, hey, Senator Obama, you need to really step up the game here a little bit. I know it's early. Maybe it's a little unfair that it's so early, but there are other plans on the table, and we're not on the same time frame that you'd like to be on. You got to start putting some more specifics out there. It's another thing when you start seeing a media narrative be created that goes much, much larger than that one performance to say Obama is all style and no substance. And we see those narratives get created and become monsters in and of themselves, and bloggers are very, very sensitive to that and want to push back whenever they see them. So I understand why it looks like a paradox, but it isn't necessarily.
And that's your take on it?
That's my take.
Okay, how's the governor doing?
He is going under the bed, which is good. That's a safe spot for him.
Good. He's not going to get dizzy and fall down there, huh?
If he gets dizzy in there, it's not as much of a concern. If he's trying to jump up on something, then we got bigger issues.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go take care of my my 9-month-old, and I'll let you take care of your cat, Bill.
Excellent. Well, it's been great talking with you.
Sounds great. Okay.